One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Frankly, that is awesome. It's the Onlyest. And the message that comes to my mental image when I'm listening to the Onlyest is of wheels going around in cars and a kind of travelogue and all sorts of things. And look, lo and behold, Pamela Sue Mann is actually being driven in a cart present by the awesome Jerry Leonard. It's awesome. And they could always be listening to the soundtrack of the Onlyest as well. Pamela, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. And Jerry, welcome back. Keep hands on the wheel, Jerry. You've got very precious cargo there. So for God's sake, hands on the wheel. That's why I say that. Sorry, it's very important. Pamela, we have got a fantastic drummer with us now, who's making his debut, as we said, on the Midweek Drive. I mean, what can I say? Toured and recorded with some of the world's most distinguished rock, pop, rhythm and blues, jazz artists, etc. Sharon Jones, the Dap Kings, Chrissy Hynde. He is the awesome Yuval Lion. How are you, Yuval?
Good. I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Nice to meet you.
Well, hi, likewise. Great to connect with you, good self. And I was chatting with Pamela earlier. Is it Yuval Lion or is it Yuval Lion? Because obviously in the French route, it'd be Yuval Lion.
Yes, also the Israeli version. It's Lion, but I stopped correcting people here just because of the spelling. And it's kind of a cool name, Lion. They like it here in America, yeah, Lion.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, Lefchuk translates from the Polish as little lion, you know, something which I don't share with many people, but there we are, you know. It's the lions in all sorts of areas. Mm-hmm. Pamela, we're very grateful that you have introduced Yuval to the system, etc. I mean, again, you've been singing his praises phenomenally, and having just heard The Onlyest, really, really impressed with that, because although it's an instrumental, Yuval, you managed to kind of bring out the percussion to an extraordinary level where it's actually there and it's echoed through the whole process. So hats off to you, sir.
Thank you so much. That's a track of a Big Lazy album, a band I'm playing in. And this music kind of allows me to, you know, throw in all kinds of elements, but it's all been done at the same time. Whatever you hear on the record is live. So I get to, you know, do like kind of a hybrid drum set with some percussion. And, but I'm glad it's coming through.
If it hasn't already been signed up by a budding motion picture to be a soundtrack for a wonderful theme, and it should be, that's all I can say, because it's awesome in terms of lines from that. Drummers have traditionally had a bit of a reputation, though, Yuval, whether we're talking about Animal from the Muppets, my own personal favourite, or indeed Jay Osmond, or Ringo Starr, or Keith Moon, etc. The drummers are usually just a little bit eccentric, more eccentric than others. How do you maintain your sanity? Is it just a case of it's all a front?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of the opposite. And I don't know how I ended up being a drummer, but I think it's Animal from the Muppet Show. You know, it's like the thing that you want to be, but you don't have the guts to show, like the eccentricness of a personality. So behind the drums, it's kind of, you don't have to do much to be eccentric on the drums, you know, that they're so loud anyway. You're like the loudest thing in the room without, you know, in your perception, you're like, you're just the drummer behind it, but you're the loudest person in the room, and which I'm usually not a loud person in the room. I like to hide a little bit. So the drums are, it's the wall of, it's my, I don't want to say alter ego, but it's, it provides, it serves me to be a loud thing, which I'm not. But also, I don't know, it's not like I'm not a very loud drummer, although I could be. But I'm not a soft player too. So I don't know, it's just a tool for me, obviously to create and to express myself in a different way rather than the usual social, conversational, channeled, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you could be super drummer, you could have an alter ego, as you said, you know, you kind of mild-mannered Yuval by day, and then by night, you know, suddenly the drumsticks come out and wham, you know, you're there, super drummer, a super percussionist. Yes. Good work in every sense of the word. I was surprised that I was so impressed with the other track that you actually sent over to us, which I thought was just truly wonderful in so many ways, because it's one of my all-time favorites in terms of Beatles songs and various other bits and pieces. She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still, you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. And you managed to make it unique and memorable in its own way, because what you've actually done with the instrumental of Girl is, again, a phenomenal. Was that something you specifically looked at? Did you think, right, I'm going to take some Lennon and McCartney stuff here and I'm going to rework it?
Well, you know, it's all Big Lazy. It's a group effort, and there's a main composer, which is the guitar player, but he kind of brought in the idea. We've been toying with it, playing it, in shows different ways. And what you hear on the recording is actually us in a room playing with Steven Bernstein, an amazing trumpet player in New York. Mm. So yeah, you know, like, just like you, everybody has that iconic version of the song in their heads. And we're just trying to do something that will get close to the feeling that you get when you hear the song. And you can sing along too. Thank you.
This is true. I mean, it almost made me go into, I mean, I won't say karaoke because I don't do karaoke, because as I've often said, karaoke is simply Japanese for can't sing a note. So on that basis, you know, I think it's important to work through that. The song itself has been analysed over the decades, though, as being one of the most deceptively simple of all of the Beatles compositions, because obviously it changes around so much. And was that a challenge to actually address the way the shape of the song worked, or was it a case of it's all adds to the fun of it?
Is there anybody going to listen to my story, all about the girl who came to stay? She's the kind of girl you want so much it makes you sorry. Still, you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. When I think of all the times I've tried so hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. And she promises the earth to me, and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Ah, oh, girl. Girl, girl. She's the kind of girl who puts you down when friends are there, you feel a fool. When you say she's looking good, she acts as if it's understood she's cool. Ooh, 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 girl. Girl, girl. Was she told when she was young that pain would lead to pleasure? Did she understand it when they said that a man must break his back? Will she still believe it when he's dead? Oh, girl. Girl, girl.
Well, I mean, anything when you touch a Beatles song and try to do something with it, it's so precious and so perfect already that you kind of try and not think about it as what it is, and you try to be in the moment and listen to the great melody and try to create something real that happens in the moment, and if it's been captured good, then that's the thing. If you think about the song, and then it's, you know, you get into a loophole, but you have to kind of forget what it was and just use whatever you know and just be in the moment and create a feeling.
Well, personally, I'm looking forward to the time where we actually have yourself, Yuval, Jerry Leonard and Pamela Suman doing a version of my all-time favourite Beatles song, which is In My Life. You know, that I think would work extremely well. You know, there are places I remember in my life. I love, you know, one that I'm putting out there, either that or Nowhere Man, one of the two would be superb. I'm sure it would work on that basis. But Pamela, we're talking about Beatles songs here. You weren't even born when the Beatles were actually sort of around from that point of view. So it's just a case of, I might as well just talk about Bach and Beethoven and all sorts of other areas. Pamela, what quiz questions would you like to put to Yuval at this moment from your driving position? Where exactly are you at present? I know you can't give us a precise location and we don't have GPS on you, but where exactly is the automobile now in New York?
We are on, where are we, Jerry? We're on the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt Highway, and it's treacherous because people in New York drive like they've never driven before. It's really scary. So That's why I have this great smile on my face. I'm very excited to be on here with Yuval, absolutely. And the whole experience is heightened by the fact that at any moment we could lose our lives. But that's okay.
No. All I can say, if it helps, that I suspect even New Yorkers can't manage the level of insanity that you get either in Paris or indeed in Rome. Now, that's sort of very dangerous, particularly in central Paris and Rome. But I'm just putting it out there. That's fine.
It's true, but it's all littler. Everything's smaller.
Pamela, you're not in Texas. I mean, you don't have to sort of raise the Texas thing. I mean, it's Texas that's everything's bigger, etc. You know, New Yorkers, quite cool.
We won't talk about Texas. Yeah, so anyway, so first of all, I love Animal. And I never really thought about Yuval and Animal in the same, you know, sphere, but now it makes a lot of sense. And when we do come and make this Beatles offering, you know, Alex, you must be the singer. I can play keyboards and you should be singing.
Okay. I'll put it in that sort of list of offers that's actually there. I mean, I'd be honored, obviously. But anyway, carry on.
So would you like me to ask Yuval a question?
I think so, yes. Even if it's... have you ever actually been asked to do an interview at 9:30 a.m. in the morning and you thought, are you insane? You know, it's the wrong time entirely.
Well, Jerry has a question for Yuval. It's, where's my bag?
Oh. That's profound. Jerry, that's Pulitzer Prize-winning material. Yes, Yuval, I presume it's not code, but where exactly is Jerry Leonard's bag?
Well, I have it.
He has it, Jerry.
But I gotta say, it was empty when I got it.
I don't.
He said it was empty when he got it.
And presumably, Yuval, the bag will be available on eBay for a requisitioned price, basically, from that point of view, because it was the authentic certificate of once handled by Jerry Leonard. It makes sense. Yeah, go with
exactly.
It.
Well, yeah. I do have a question for Yuval, because, you know, it's not often that we get to interview each other, is it? I mean, we're so busy just trying to keep up with, you know, putting the tracks together and sending them and turning them into WAV files, etc. But Yuval, I would like to know, because you are such a unique drummer, really. I mean, I really can't say this because my other drummer friends would kill me, but I just absolutely love your playing. It's just top.
Okay.
And you're such a deep artist on the drums. And so my question to you is, because I know we've had similar training. I mean, I'm not a drummer, but we've gone to the same, we both went to Berklee College of Music at different times. So, well, given all that, and of course you are a school drummer and you have that education, my question to you is, how have you developed such a deeply unique artistic sort of painterly and way of playing drums? Because you've got an amazing groove, you're incredible, but you've done something that very few drummers are able to achieve, which is to find your own voice, and you really do play like an artist, like a true singular artist. So I wanted to know, like, what you have to say about that.
So first of all, thank you. And
Jerry paid me really well to say that. Yeah. The money's in the bag.
What was the question? So the short answer is I dropped off college. No, but that's actually, Berklee was amazing. I spent 3 semesters there and learned a lot of music theory, and opened my mind.
Just out of interest, yeah. Yuval, did it actually prepare you for actually appearing on the Jimmy Fallon show with Martha Wainwright? Because that's what we need to know. That's what my students would need to know. You know, did this really prep, you know, for the Jimmy Fallon show and that sort of musical appearance?
Well, for that specific gig, no. But, you know, I came to Berklee after 3 years of army service in Israel, and I was in the army, the Air Force Big Band, which was like a pop band, and playing 5 days a week, five nights a week. And when you're not playing a show, you rehearse during the day, and you have the top arrangers of the country come in and bring new arrangements. So you have to study, you have to learn how to read, and you have to read well, and you have to play well and accompany the biggest artists in the country. Cause we are free. We're like the free good band in Israel, cause we're owned by the government. Right. So I came to Berkeley with a lot of experience. And after the army, I worked a lot in Israel and touring with different artists, playing on records. So I kind of came to Berkeley, and it was kind of like taking five steps back in order to move forward, because I had all the experience of playing shows, playing on TV, playing in studios. But I didn't have a lot of music theory and a lot of experience being exposed to all amazing young players from different countries all over the world. So that was a good thing about Berkeley. But I dropped out after three semesters and moved to New York and just started playing with different bands and different gigs, and you realize at one point that you have to do something different, because to New York you get all the best players in the world, or the best wannabe best players in the world come to New York and just trying to be the best. And and I'm not a...
But surely, Yuval, it should be collaborative, not competitive. If you're competitive, you're automatically going to end up disappointed at some point.
Yeah, it's but not with, other, not with other drummers, right?
Yeah.
So I just, I figured I have to find my own kind of voice. I'm not the fastest drummer, or I'm not like a flashy drummer, but my angle was... finding a sound, and my feel is my feel. It's something, nothing you can work on. It's just you're born with a feel, and hopefully it's good. And one more thing about creating, like presenting a higher artistic level or openness, or I played in bands a lot. I was a band member. I had three bands that I was in them for 12 years, and in a band you have to be original, you have to kind of present, find yourself and put it out in the best way you can. And
was percussion always something you felt drawn to, or have there been moments where you thought, I wish I'd actually picked up the oboe?
No, percussion was always it. If you ask me now,
A cello, perhaps?
I wish a harmonica or like a whistle. You can play a whistle. Yeah. It's easy enough, right?
I think Pamela suggested a kazoo there. That's just taking the mic off. I mean, you go onto a triangle next, basically. It's just up there. Or a comb and a piece of paper. That's also used, I think, in many
ways. Yeah, I did that, actually. Yeah.
In terms of this, the huge wealth of artists you've actually worked from, and I'm not going to ask, have you got any favourites? Because that'd be crass and ridiculous on that basis. But have there been moments where you've actually signed up with somebody, let's say Martha Wainwright or David Byrne or Chrissy Hynde, etc., and you've actually been quite impressed, but you didn't want to show that? Because musicians are notoriously cool, as Pamela's kind of suggested. Sometimes they can have challenges getting the right time. Obviously, present company accepted. Sometimes it's a case of just finding the notion of having that discipline to be part of the whole thing and not going all offbeat, etc. Have there been any sort of experiences where you thought, actually, now this is really working? That magical moment where all things work together and you thought, this is it. We've captured that audio nirvana.
You mean with which artist? If I had that with any other,
Or hasn't it happened yet? I mean, you know, clearly that routine with Pamela and Jerry and yourself doing Beatles cover versions could still occur.
Sometimes you're so in the moment that it's hard to realize this is it, and you, like, only a little after you realize. But and sometimes you're a bit overwhelmed with really noticing stuff, like if you know, like for me, recording with Chrissy Hynde and then hear that voice in the headphones and it's not the record, it's Chrissy in the next room, you know, and growing up on that music and. Same thing.
The question, Yuval, is: did she put brass in pockets? Did she actually stand by you? And did she actually have a kid? I mean, these are the critical lines we need to ask when we talk Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders. Clearly,
all of the above.
Excellent.
But it's just, you know, at the end of the day, you try to forget who you're playing with and just remember you're playing music and. And just do what you know how to do, you know. Obviously, you have to be flexible with special requests. And
the reverse of that, let's look at your studio musicians. Now, I'm not going to ask for names for this, but have there ever been occasions where you've been signed up for a studio session and you've had an artist who, frankly, has been insufferable and you've just thought, what the heck is this person wanting?
Uh-huh. Well, Jerry called me once, and no. Well, it's, you know, it's not on my bio.
Okay, so, okay. So it's that moment when you're actually sort of you might turn to look at one of your fellow musicians, and you don't have to say anything. You just raise your eyebrows, and you think, "We've got a plonker here," you know, because I know that occurs in Britain occasionally. You think, "What's going on?"
Yes, I mean, sometimes, you know, it can get tedious, like in a studio and you can't get it down and you're just trying to play through and everybody's kind of like, they know where they are. And
music history, I mean, let's face it, you don't want to go down the line in terms of music production of the Phil Everly reaching for a shotgun to get a wall of sound. I mean, that's going to be offensive and it's not going to work, is it really? So,
exactly. Yeah. That's why I have a bulletproof bass drum, you know.
Well, in New York, I've said time and time again, USA, sort out the gun law scenario. Anyway, let's not go there.
Safety first.
Yeah. Clutter. It's a feature we're going to run after we've wrapped up this interview today, basically, but it's all about decluttering and the general line that we have too much clutter in our lives. Pamela, I'll talk to you first. Are there any moments in life when you sort of feel as though, right, I've got to have a decluttering moment here to kind of get myself sorted out?
Oh, never. I think that 75% of my life involves decluttering. Absolutely. You know, when we moved back down to the city, you live in a house in the country and you realize, I mean, it's fun from a studio standpoint because you can have all the bells and whistles and all different crazy instruments, you know, in your house and in your attic and the closets. But when you move to a, you know, like a no room apartment in the city, with literally one closet to share between three people, you need to rethink. And you need to think about what you need in terms of desert island clothing and desert island, you know, instruments and desert island pots and pans, and et cetera. So I think that was a really good experience. It was about 2.5 years ago now. But it took nearly a year to sort of downsize and declutter and try. And I think New York City, again, will help you declutter or live like a crazy person with everything, which people do. I try not to, but it's amazing how quickly we can amass stuff, right? So,
I reveal this on the interview, which we recorded earlier, but if you actually have anybody who would like to have about 1,000 VHS videotapes, then I can certainly deliver that. You know, where are they going to go? It's just unbelievable. So, never mind. That's another line entirely. Yuval, what about yourself? Any sort of issues with respect to clutter, or has your army training effectively sorted that out? You know, in the Israeli army, crack people all the time, you know, they don't have any clutter whatsoever.
Yeah. You just throw a grenade in the middle and the clutter is gone.
I'm not even going to go there with respect to the whole sort of system at all.
That's my career. That's the secret of my career.
Okay. A metaphorical grenade.
Yeah. But every day, by the end of the day, there's a big clutter for the next day. Like, you know, we have two young children, and especially in COVID time, any time, it's kind of trying to schedule an interview or, you know.
Yeah, scheduling an interview has been a piece of cake, basically, particularly in different countries. Yeah, it's straightforward.
But it's little knots that happen every 15 minutes. And by the end of the day, if you didn't try and untie them, there's a big clutter and it carries on to the next day. And then miraculously, it kind of things, because time keeps going and things keep happening. And
although there is the point that actually we should live in the now, as Eckhart Tolle would actually say, that's the true secret to creativity, having that perfect moment of the now and experience the now, because the now is all we ever have. We can't go back to the start of this interview. We can't go forward to the future. We're in the now. We're in the moment.
Especially with creative stuff, you know, you have to be in the moment. And I just want to say for the most recent, not recent, but since the pandemic, you know, the connection with Pam and Jerry, and it would be like, you know, I just started doing the recording myself, like build a little drum studio. And at the time I was in Massachusetts in a car garage with three drums and two microphones. And Pam is sending me like a demo on a piano of, hey, I wrote this. Do you think you can do something? And I'm like, yeah. I didn't even have the drums yet. And I'm posting on Facebook. Anybody in Boston has a drum set? And somebody says, yeah, come get it. And I put it in the garage and, you know, I recorded two mics. And that process started. And, you know, we kind of got me off the mess of the pandemic that everybody was in. And, you know, my hour and a half in the garage playing music. And then it kept going. And I think we created maybe five or six songs. And I grew with my recording techniques and devices. And but it was a great unclutter of a huge, huge clutter above our heads, you know. Even if you don't really unclutter, but it was a great break from the reality.
And Pamela, can you share with us one of those tracks that had percussion provided by Yuval Lyon?
Oh goodness, yeah. You know, it's funny. I wonder. Yeah, I mean. there's one that's really sad. So I haven't shared it with you, Alex, but
yeah. Pamela, it's 20 year anniversary of 9/11. That you can't get sadder than that. We need a sad piece of music now.
There's a song called Wisp Requiem, but I'll have to send it to you. There's a new song that we're very excited about, which Jerry's calling a cartoon. And I'll tell you about that because we are going to release it. It's a ridiculous, happy song, but we can't play that one yet. So I'd say Wisp Requiem, which I will send you.
Well, that's absolutely perfect. And we've already actually heard a sort of segue between the instrumental girl and the Beatles girl. So it's all worked well with respect to that. A little bit of post-production will obviously work into place with us back to that. Yuval, have you ever wanted to ask Pamela or indeed Jerry a question whilst they're driving? In fact, I think they've parked now. Have they parked? Or have they just stopped at a road junction?
Traffic.
it's traffic. It's very enough. Traffic in New York. Surely some mistake. Yuval, any question you'd like to put to them now that they're sort of locked into this Zoomer with us?
Uh-huh. Well, why?
Why? Excellent. That's all we need. Yeah, Pamela, why?
Yuval, this is why I love you. Economy of words.
Yeah.
Why? Searching that one out. Every day is a search for the why. I really must say, though, that it has just made my life so much better and richer to be able to work with Yuval, and especially work in this wonky, crazy way. And thank you for being so non-judgmental about the ridiculous iPhone demos that I sent you. I've been, Yuval and I sort of started this thing where we were collaborating, and I'll send something and he'll play drums, and then I'll write a completely different song to it sometimes, which is really, really inspired by the drums. They're so musical. So the why is because I have found Yuval Lion.
Superb. You see,
I have a serious question to Pam, because I always like...
Are you saying, Yuval, that your why wasn't a serious question? I'll have you know that little question, why, caused a computer to blow up in the episode of The Prisoner entitled The General.
I knew the answer, but before I ask the question, because Pam, the way she, I don't know how she writes, but that's what I'm about to ask. But what you get is this, you get a vibe of created by chords and a voice. It's so mysterious, and it can go many different ways, and sometimes it's super fragile, sometimes it's like poppy, like here it is, boom. And so I just want to ask quickly, what comes first, the melody or the music, like the chords or the lyrics? What comes first to you?
Are you still there?
Yes, we're still here, and we can still see your photograph, Pamela, so worry not.
Oh, yeah, I've lost the picture there, but that's okay. I would say it's definitely comes from a feeling. It comes from an emotion. It's definitely from an emotion. You know, I, like many artists and poets, I receive emotion from everything that comes through my filter, whether it's, of course, all personal, but like it could be just, you know, looking at a scene on the sidewalk, but it's definitely brings an emotion to my heart and to my soul. And then that evokes a whole world, which is visual and lyrical and musical, and it's like the synesthesia of everything. And I say that because I write words even when I don't write music, always writing words constantly. So it's, but the best thing, and what happens quite often, is that a little melody will pop up with the words, and then I just fill it in and color it with music, because I am not a virtuosic musician or composer. So I go from the canon of what I know and what I can imagine in my head and my heart. So it's sort of everything at the same time as a little seed, and then I try and sketch it the best way I can to get it out there.
It's been like a masterclass from Berkeley students to the world, which is absolutely wonderful. Yuval, awesome connecting with your good self. I'll throw those last two questions at you, because with Pam being in a cart present, it would be too dangerous to ask her to ask them questions. She knows what they are, and I will deliver them hopefully in a reasonable format. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us, Yuval Lion?
What? Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Many people actually respond with exactly that written. A what? A Zoomer. It's the line we tend to use to define these interviews. You know, it's a case of, it's not a phone link, it's a Zoomer. Has it been okay for you?
This? Great.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Lovely to meet you too.
I still think Yuval Lion should actually be the pronunciation that's actually there.
Yes.
I think Yuval Lion. It flows, you know. Yuval Lion. I don't know, but you know, it's America, I suppose. Whatever. There are lots of people who've had to change their names. Pamela, has it been good for you?
Absolutely. I'm going to practice Lion, and I'm going to think of the two of you as as two lions. It's pretty exciting. I've had a wonderful time, and it's been so incredible to speak to you all in this way, because we're all so busy. We just don't get the chance to, and you know, it'd be a little creepy if you interview your friends, you know. But
it's not designed to be creepy, Pamela. It's designed to be entertaining for the world. You know,
no, but this is not creepy.
Exactly.
Jerry still wants to know where the bag is. So,
that was my question to
Jerry. Look, it's been buried, Jerry. It's been buried. Just don't talk about it. Please leave them. Let the bag lie. That's all we can say. Let the bag lie.
Where's your bag, Jerry?
Where's your bag, Jerry? That's his question to you.
But yeah. And one more thing. The biggest obstacle for me that I don't speak or understand English.
Listen, there are many Americans you could level that at, including former presidents of the United States who also have had difficulty understanding English. So don't get me started on that one. No names, but, you know, they were elected to the office. I don't think they understood a word the rest of us were saying. Still, never mind.
I think that Yuval's understanding of English is better than most Americans.
Yes. Next up, Yuval will attempt to solve the Israeli-Palestine crisis. I'm sure you'll be on the case. Before use music, and if all else fails, throw in a grenade. No, ignore that. Do not do that at all. It's not up there. So, Yuval, will you be kind enough to return, assuming we can get the time zones correct? Will you come back sometime and share more magic with us from the world of percussion and drums and more?
Anytime.
And Pamela, you already have...
3:30 today.
Yeah, exactly. and Pamela, obviously we have your own sort of segment. Are you back with us? Will you be happy to return and keep us more entertained with life, the universe, and the tales of an ace songstress?
Oh, without a doubt. Yes, count me in.
And I know Jerry will hopefully return when he gets back and he's not driving a car, because that would be just crazy to actually do that all sort of things.
Jerry said he's going to return when he gets the bag.
Jerry, you took the words right out of my mouth, which of course is a classic from Meatloaf, which again would work quite nicely. But still, there we are.
Thank you.
musical instruments, inherited jewelry, collector's items, food making machines, and old electronic devices. What do they have in common? Well, you could argue once they've been used, or indeed possibly not used, they just tend to clutter up our lives. So how can we actually get on a mission to declutter our own particular lives and indeed possibly do some very good work for the British Heart Foundation as well? We need to bring on board the experts. And who better? The person who actually launched in 2015, A Tidy Mind. It's the founder of Kate Iverson. It's Kate Iverson. How are you, Kate?
Hello. Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Founder of A Tidy Mind, of course, from that point of view, and a major declutterer. Did you have a Damascus-like moment, Kate, at one time in your life where you thought, this is it, there's too much clutter in my life, it's time to actually set up a company to deal with this?
Yeah, I was my own first client. I used to have way too much stuff that I held on to, and I went on my own decluttering journey, and I got so much out of it that I thought, I've got to learn how to do this and teach other people how to do it as well.
Share and save the world. brings us neatly around, of course, to the British Heart Foundation, who have actually sort of managed to take this on board, but also put in place a really useful thing to actually help not only ourselves become more coordinated and indeed deal with all the stuff that we've accumulated, but also actually put some good news into the planet and indeed the British Heart Foundation. So, Carol, welcome again. Talk us through what this sort of initiative is all about and how simply following Kate Ibbotson's directives in terms of decluttering can actually be good for the planet, good for ourselves, and good for the British Heart Foundation.
Yes, absolutely. So we would like everyone to take on the September Declutter Challenge. So make the start to decluttering a small part of your house or the whole of your house. And we try to make it easy for everyone. We've all got busy lives. So there's really three routes to donate to the British Heart Foundation. Drop your things off at one of our 700 shops and stores. Go online and book a free collection service where we will come and collect your items from your home, or use our free postal donation service. So that makes it easy for everyone. So, and make your donations go further if you can. Gift age your donations. It makes such a massive difference to us as a charity.
Fear of missing out, FOMO, of course, is very popular, but FOLG, fear of letting go, is perhaps one of the key things that acts as a barrier, Kate, in terms of, well, it may not be sort of useful now, but I might need it in 4 or 5 years' time.
Yeah, I think that's really common. And I think it's just about thinking about the flip side of it, about how what the disadvantages are to keeping it, which is that it's taking up space that you could be using for something else. And just thinking about what are the advantages to decluttering. You know, it's about simplifying your life, about having less to think about, to clean, to look after. Of course, it's about supporting charities, because it's such a shame for these things to be sitting around not used when they could be sold, raising money for the British Heart Foundation and someone treasured by someone else. It can also help people move on from the past, you know, when you're having a fresh start and letting go of the clutter that's weighing you down metaphorically, you know.
As we become more experientially enhanced, or indeed chronologically gifted, I know some people might just say older, but we do tend to gather more stuff together. Is that something which this survey kind of demonstrates with those folk who happen to be blessed to be over 74 years of age, tending to hold on to unused items for nearly 3 years, whereas, of course, the millennials and Generation Z effectively can get rid of things within literally a year to 10 months.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, I would say that, you know, the older generation are more used to holding on to things. You know, it's the waste not, want not generational mentality. There's nothing wrong with that at all as an attitude, is there? It's just that when it starts to impact on our space, and when the things aren't being used and they could be used by someone else and you know, raising money, then it seems a shame to hold on to them.
Carol, we talked earlier about how this campaign can also be good for the planet. I mean, looking at one of the findings here, that the British Heart Foundation estimates that this year it's going to prevent around 71,000 tons of goods from ending up in landfill. Just break that down. How can we actually sort of say that? I mean, or is it just a case of, well, this is total recyclability, total sustainability in action?
Yes, well, donating the treasures that you clear out from your home, instead of sending them to the tip or to landfill, donate them to the British Heart Foundation. We will deal with all of that, and it enables us to raise funds to support the staggering 6.7.6 million people in the UK that live with heart and circulatory disease. And I'd like people to be really confident that we take our responsibility to raise the highest price for your decluttering treasures that we can. So we may well sell them on our online eBay site, we may well sell them on Depop, or we may indeed sell them in our shops and stores. And we're doing good for the planet at the same time.
And again, looking at some of the financial aspects of the whole thing, interesting that £16 worth of donations can support an early career scientist. Why is that important, you might well say? Well, that obviously helps research. It helps an hour's research, etc. £25 will give a researcher an hour's access to equipment. And indeed, if donations reach £100, that will also fund a DNA extraction kit, which identify genes linked to heart and circulatory diseases. Just share with us, Kate, for the point of view of your own sort of input with the British Heart Foundation, why you personally believe this is such an important way forward.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's a win-win situation because there's the benefits of decluttering, which is creating space, gaining more mental clarity, gaining more time, easier home to clean. And then is the fact that it's a waste that if something's not being used, someone else could use it. And it's helping the British Heart Foundation raise money and, you know, get back on track after the pandemic when obviously things weren't being donated as often then. So there's just no downside to it, really. That's the way I see it.
And Carol, obviously, from the perspective of the British Heart Foundation, the more research that can be done into heart disease, the less of a challenge it can hopefully be. And maybe we're approaching step by step a day when coronary challenges are reduced markedly from the current sort of way that people experience them.
Yes, absolutely. The British Heart Foundation is in its 60th year, and there's been massive advances in research over that time. But we're hugely ambitious for the research that we want to fund over the coming 60 years. So every small donation really genuinely does help us in that ambition to find a cure for heart disease.
Well, Kate, if you only had some sort of advice in terms of how to deal with lots and lots of old videotapes and so on, then I'd certainly be sort of keen to obviously commit to that point of view. But I don't think anybody actually wants to purchase those videotapes these days. It's just another line entirely. Still, that's going to be a challenge for you for the next few months. But see if we can recycle the old sort of VHS videotapes. Just put it out there.
Yeah, I'm working on that one.
Okay. How can people actually get in touch with this particular campaign, Carol? Is it just a case of follow the links to the British Heart Foundation on the web? Where should they actually go?
Yeah, the easiest way is to log on to our website, www.bhf.org.uk, or visit your local British Heart Foundation shop or store in your local town.
And Carol, just from your own point of view, what things have you sort of found it most challenging to declutter from your own life? Or is it just a case of, no, as regional manager for the British Heart Foundation, I have no clutter whatsoever?
I have loads of clutter. And the thing I find hardest to clear out is shoes. I counted them last night ahead of today and I have 60 pairs of shoes. So I'm going to make a commitment here. I'm going to declutter some of my shoes this weekend.
Yeah, that's almost Imelda Marcos levels of shoe package from that point of view. This is wonderful. It's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. And by the way, if people want to get in touch with the Tidy Mind, Kate, what's the best link to that?
Yeah, so that is www.atidymind.co.uk and lots of information and frequently asked questions on the website and about where we cover too.
Fantastic. Kate Iverson, a professional declutterer, organiser and indeed founder of A Tidy Mind, and Carol Mitchell from the British Heart Foundation. Huge thanks and happy decluttering.
Thank you.
Thank you.